comes to a deceptive tongue. I wonder if there's anything worse than a military Bible stick. Particularly since the third item on this list is hands that shed innocent blood. What do you think our military is doing? What do you think they're trained to do? We sent our military in another country. We're not at war with them. Afghanistan didn't threaten the United States. Iraq didn't threaten the United States. Afghanistan wasn't in a position to invade the United States. Iraq wasn't in a position to invade the United States. You could have given Afghanistan and Iraq 100 years of planning and have the whole world work with them and support them, and they still wouldn't have been in a position to project a force and invade and occupy the United States, nor Afghanistan, nor Iraq and Afghanistan combined, nor Libya, nor Syria. So our military certainly was not protecting us. They weren't there to prevent the imminent demise of an American. They weren't being used that way. There was no justification, not rational, not moral, not reasonable, for invading Afghanistan or Iraq or Libya or Syria. So when we send our military into these places, they're taking innocent lives. Now, the lives of those people may be worthless, and that the vast preponderance have been corrupted with religion and have no hope. But they aren't killing these individuals because, well, they're at our doorstep, and if we don't kill them, they're going to take an American life. That's just not true. And even then, if it's your only use of force, from what I can tell, is if someone is invading your home and they present an imminent and undeniable threat to the safety and well-being of your children, to yourself even. Yeah, I guess you can even respond that way as well. That if somebody is threatening to kill you, has the ability to kill you, the threat is real and it's imminent, then you can respond with deadly force, because this is not just killing, it's taking of innocent life. So if those are the circumstances, if someone is invading your home and is threatening to kill your wife, your children, those that are innocent around you, then you can respond. There's certainly none of that happening with the U.S. military. There isn't a single invasion that it has put off. It's not fighting here, it's fighting and killing over there. And the Bible, it means with the Lord, with confusion. It's synonymous with Babel, Babylon, the very site of Satan's power and influence, the source of the whore of Babylon that's spoken of in Revelation, even spoken of here in this passage that we're considering right now. Yahweh's least favorite institution on earth, apart from that which is religious, would be militaristic. And so here you have a religious institution promoting a military tool called the military Bible stick. I don't know if there could be anything more symbolic of what God hates and views as an abomination than that. Of course, it just has the Christian New Testament, because from the Christian point of view, their New Testament replaced the Old Testament, which causes one to wonder why bother to even carry around that which has been replaced. And half of that Christian New Testament was written by the man that, over and over and over again calls the plague of death, Paul, calling him out by name as Shaul. That was his given name. discussing his audience, identifying his audience, identifying his attitude, identifying his proclivities, his timing, his place, and the means that he would use to deceive. And yet it's being promoted as a, in the name of God, to bring God's peace. This is the thing that God despises the most. When people claim to speak for him and they're promoting lies, it is the reason for the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. It's unforgivable. So not only is the promoters of the military Bible stick find themselves in an unforgivable position with God, means they're being judged. If you're being judged by God and you find yourself in an unforgivable position, you're going to hell. And it not only means that they're taking the lives of all of those who believe them, who rely on their product, and that there's God's going to hold them accountable for that. He's going to say, why did you make merchandise of men? Why did you injure people like this? And then on top of all that, you have the realization that they're doing so, claiming to speak for a God that they do not represent, and God's going to hold them accountable. They don't even know God's name. They have in their military Bible stick, you can be certain that they have made his name for naught. You won't find Yahweh's name in your Christian New Testament. And the military Bible stick doesn't even use the name of the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. Yahweh's physical presence here on earth, the most set apart, Yahusha, Yahweh saving. They don't even refer to him as the Messiah. So, what do you have? What you have is pure rubbish. It's the very thing that this proverb is addressing. Visions of grandeur, whether it's the Pope or head of a church or denomination, whether it's a president or a military leader, society's leaders, those with their eyes above the fray, above the common individual, God hates. Deceptive tongues, those who deceive. Deceptive here is the Hebrew word shakur. It means false and misleading. You see, the reason that he lists this second. First, it's the attitude that causes the problem. The same thing was true with Satan. That's why we learn about Satan's affinity with Babylon and that his problem was pride. And pride is what led him to be the slippery tongue devil that he is. It's the motivation. So God started with the motivation, elevating one's position, visions of grandeur, a rebellious perspective that leads to deceptive speech, false and misleading statements, rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs, irrational positions, vain and useless claims, fraudulent testimony. And the third is that those kind of speeches lead to the shedding of innocent blood. It's lies that cause men and women to march off to war. It was the lies of the sinking of the Maine, Spanish-American War, the sinking of the Lusitania, the First World War. It is the Gulf of Tonkin, the Vietnam War. It was weapons of mass destruction, the Iraqi War. That Al-Qaeda was and the Taliban had conceived 9/11. We needed to go to Afghanistan to do away with those that attacked us. Lies. Military interventionism based upon lies. It's what we do. And we shed innocent blood. So when you think yourself to be godlike, as Americans have, and then you use propaganda, indoctrination, deceptive speeches, then people go off and shed innocent blood, as we have in Syria, in Libya, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. The third thing on the list is a heart which deceives and writes that which is troublesome, idolatrous, false, perpetrating evil plans. He went to the heart because the heart is the place from which human ambitions flow. You know, it's one thing to view yourself as important, visions of grandeur. It's another thing for you to profess that which is untrue and mislead people. It's another thing for them to go off and kill. That's one of the reasons we never, ever condone or promote violence here. Ever. In fact, we condemn it routinely. Use your words. Speak the truth. But when one's motivated selfishly, when one is motivated unjustly, then they will promote things with their words and with their presentation of their own value, like the abominator, like the Pope, that ultimately create schemes, plans, that are counterproductive, troublesome, false. And here the word ma'asba means to invent and to devise, to imagine and to impute cunning designs and proposals. And here these proposals are conveyed via charash, which means to engrave and inscribe them, to do as Paul did, to do as Rabbi Akiva did, to do as Hitler did, to write them down. It even speaks of charash here with a heart that tries to silence others and to create, have the masses become deaf so that they are no longer capable of listening to anyone who addresses the truth about them, who's willing to tell you the truth. The IQ al-Rasulis of the world, they turn a deaf ear to them. And these schemes make it very difficult for people to speak up. So it causes most people to be unresponsive. That's why you can tell people until you're blue in the face that their religions are counterproductive, that their political parties are counterproductive, that their military is counterproductive, and they're unresponsive. The third thing is that God has on his list, excuse me, the fifth thing that God has on his list after visions of grandeur, deceptive tongues, hands that shed innocent blood, and a heart which devises and writes troublesome schemes, are feet which rashly and impetuously run to and fro, darting about to approach that which is evil. We literally run to evil. It's a mass migration. You know, Yosha in the Sermon on the Mount said that not only was the way flexible and broad that leads to destruction, to lifelessness. He said that many there are that find it. It's well trodden. People throughout history have run to that which isn't true. A lot of reasons for it. One of the most prominent is that those in charge, the religious, political, military leaders, usually all wrapped into one, those in charge, typically create an environment. For example, like Erdogan is doing in Turkey, where he ransacked a media institution that would dare challenge his veracity. on the eve of an election, that those who would speak out are imprisoned. Then in those prisons, they're tortured. And so how many people are going to be willing to speak out against evil when speaking out against evil leads to them being tortured? Look at the Holy Roman Empire and Europe under the auspices of cleric and king. If you dared speak out against those institutions that were so maligning the people, so deceiving the people, so harassing the people, so deadly and destructive to individuals, the price you would pay is that you'd be tortured to death. Very few people are going to be willing to do that, particularly people who do not know Yahweh. The only thing they have, they lose. And if they don't do it, there is no hope for anyone. And if they do it, there is the consequence is grievous for them. And the society makes it so grievous to discourage anyone else from being willing to do so. Today, if you go against political correctness, if you say something that is not politically correct, if you're in academia, you will absolutely lose your job. If you're willing to side with the truth over the politically correct deception, in business, you will lose your job. In politics, you will become unelectable. You'll lose your job. In academia and politics and the military, same thing is true. If you dare communicate the truth, if your alibi was what I said was true, even though it was not politically correct, it doesn't matter. So we've created a society where people have been conditioned, and this has been true, really, through time. The Roman Empire was the exact same way. The Spartan Empire, the same way. We've created a society whereby people are conditioned out of fear not to listen to that which is true and to dare not say what is true. And as a result, people move rashly without thinking toward evil. As a result of people's visions of grandeur, as a result of deceptive testimony, as a result of heart-filled motivations that are pure evil, people are motivated to run to evil. They take the popular route. And the vast preponderance of people throughout time have run to and embraced that which is evil, thoughtlessly. You know, it's no matter what your religion is, it is extraordinarily easy to disprove it. Whether it's socialist secular humanism and your dependence on life being conceived out of nothingness and macroevolution and the stupidity of that, the fact that it's impossible, the fact that from each according to their ability and to each according to their need never works, the fact that every time you say that you're doing this to elevate the people over the elitists, that all you do is create a new empowered group of elitists that are over the people. That whether it is socialist secular humanism, where there is no God, where man raises his eyes and deceives and marches people off towards the most deadly doctrine ever conceived by humanity, socialist secular humanism, led to more than 100 million people dying as a result of socialist secular humanist regimes just in the last 100 years. Whether it is that doctrine or Christianity with its aversion to Yahweh's testimony, corruption of Yahweh's testimony, or Islam, the most destructive and deadly religion ever conceived by humankind. But no matter the doctrine, it's extraordinarily easy to prove that they are untrue, that they're unreliable. And yet, rather than taking the time to investigate the truth, the vast preponderance of people rashly, impulsively run to be part of the masses. They just go along. This is depicting this feat which rashly and impetuously, hurriedly and foolishly, without thinking, motivated either by fear or false hope, run to their own demise. It's depicting the lemming. It's depicting the modern manifestation of a zombie. The sixth thing that Giannis says that he thinks is both an abomination to one's soul and that he personally hates, the sixth and final thing that he hates, but the sixth of seven that is an abomination to one's soul, is a maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony which incites the deluded to worship false gods. Puach, Kazab. He who breathes out dishonest religious speeches, a blowhard, testifying loudly, formally, zealously proclaiming a deceptive delusion which is contrary to reality. Someone who is contemptuous, condescending, derisive and mocking, slandering and insulting, while delusionally claiming to be a valid witness, blasting away, enraged, demanding others accept and submit to their contradictions and errant testimony regarding pagan gods, even though this individual is easily proven to be a liar, and that the religious deceptions cause the victim to be wrong, even in that reality. The promoter demands allegiance. Mao was wrong. If you went against him, you were tortured and killed. Stalin was wrong. But if you went against him, you were off to the gulag. Hitler was wrong. And yet, if you challenged him, it was off to the concentration camp. Hadrian was deliriously mistaken, egocentric in all of his words and his deeds. And yet, if you challenged him, he would burn you alive or crucify you. That's what they do. The Catholic Church was the inventor of the most exquisite implements of pain ever developed by humankind. All because they wanted to make certain that if you were willing to challenge that which they were saying and prove it to be untrue, you'd pay a hell of a price. It's interesting that we have feet that run about darting to and fro to run to evil. It's interesting that we have hearts which devise and write troublesome and immoral plans. We have eyes that have visions of grandeur. But among the six, two of the six have to do with speech. Tongues that are misleading, rhetoric which leads to mistaken beliefs, and this maligning soul which breathes out sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony. So two of the six things God hates is the rhetoric of man. Something to think about, isn't it, Kirk?
Yes, sir. He starts out with Satan in the garden twisting words.
Yeah.
So it never started.
Yeah, that was a conversation of twisting words. God spoke to Adam and Chawa, provided them with instructions. They disregarded Yahweh's instructions. And you'll notice here that the point that I was trying to make in the first hour, which was that God really would not care. And he has very little to say about Hinduism, for example. And the reason he does is because Hinduism doesn't try to garner its credibility based upon corrupting his testimony. Buddhism is the same thing. He doesn't say much about Buddhism. But he has a lot to say about Christianity, a lot to say about Judaism, a lot to say about Islam, because all three claim that his testimony is valid, and then they contradict it in every possible way. That's what God doesn't like. That's the thing I think he despises the most.
Yeah.
So this is a maligning soul who utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods, and doing so as a false witness.
If he wasn't talking about Babel. If he wasn't talking about religious and governments and military, then who else could he be talking about? Because he turns around. The beauty of everything he says, always says, when he attacks something, he says, okay, if you go there, you die. But he always gives you the alternate. When you get down to seven and eight, you'll find, oh, not seven, but the seventh thing, and then on to the what he tells you, he always turns you back and say, go here. And it's always the Torah.
Well, certainly the military is in there because the taking of innocent lives. And you've got religion in there because one of the terms that the term he uses for evil is the center of Egyptian religion. I mean, it's a religious term. So, he's certainly got... the Bible stick is covered here.
Yeah. So if
religion and militarism.
Yeah. The thing I was thinking, if you're looking at this, trying to justify your religion or your point of view, militaristic or whatever, you can't find it here. He's very plain. I looked up every word in each line, and you haven't mistranslated anything. I mean, anybody can go and check it too. I mean, it's not like. It's not like you're extrapolating here. I mean,
he's talking about the speech givers.
Yeah.
I mean,
this
is these are the speech givers. These are the designers of doctrines. So the people, the things that he hates are those that are perpetrating these corruptions, and they're doing so with their words. Yeah, there's no way to get around that. Mm-hmm. You know, the average businessman prospers by doing. Not by talking, not by big speeches.
Yeah, deliver the goods.
But the religious person, the pastor, the priest, they promote what they do. Their job is speech related. The politicians is speech related. The military persons is orders related. Speech. I mean, the big three are all based upon rhetoric, aren't they?
Yeah, and they always say we're the leaders. And did Yahweh ask you to have a leader?
No. Yeah, they're the ones with the visions of grandeur, and they're the ones whose the people follow foolishly and thoughtfully and thoughtlessly and rashly. They're the ones that send people off to kill. They're the ones who proclaim that which is destructive. And so the big three use their rhetoric. They use their words to deceive politicians. Pastors, priests, clerics do so, and the orders of the military leaders. He's talking about the big three that he doesn't like here.
Did you hear the Jeb Bush commercial yesterday?
No, I didn't. What do you have to say?
He's talking to a group of people. He says, and he's asking them, who will protect the Christians in the Middle East if the U.S. doesn't? Who will take care of Israel, our number one ally, if we, the U.S.?
Yeah, since the invasion of Iraq, the reason we're laughing here, we should be crying. You know, there were somewhere between 1 and 2 million Christians in Iraq at the time that America took care of them. And we did such a good job of taking care of them during his brother's invasion of Iraq. That they've been annihilated. You've gone from between 1 and 2 million Christians down to maybe 100,000. Who took care of them? Saddam Hussein took care of them. Who led to their annihilation? The United States invasion.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there were about a million Christians in Syria before our invasion.
Yeah.
Our bombing. Now they've been taken from their homes, their children... enslaved, gang raped, sodomized? Yeah, who took care of them? Oh, it's just great, huh?
Yeah. And what
do? We are the... can you imagine being that stupid?
Well, they plotted him.
And and who's taking care of Israel if America doesn't? We sell 25 times, and no one was more pro-Muslim than his brother. His brother was the one that initiated these massive sales of American war materials to the Muslims. No one went further to protect these Islamic nations of George W. Bush. I mean, 9/11, he redacted the entire criticism of Saudi Arabia. He went to war, committing American troops to a war to liberate Kuwait and protect Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
How many Christians are there in Saudi Arabia, besides those that are just paid to do work as if they were slaves?
I don't think it's a good place to be, so I doubt if there are many left now. If there ever were many.
Wow.
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, if there ever were any. Yeah. Yeah, so. Oh, goodness gracious.
Well, that's twisting the truth. I mean, who can lie better than a politician and a preacher?
Both the best of it. You know, the rhetoric are who gives more deadly instructions than a military officer?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what we, U.S. War College, their most recent and most extensive product of research was published here. We have shared it over and over on this program. And what they came to recognize is that a culture of deceit runs rampant in the U.S. military, all levels of the military, from the enlisted to the officers, and that it is so prevalent that most of what is said is untrue, and that there's no compulsion, there's no moral reason in the U.S. military to tell the truth. And so you have the most destructive weapons in the world in the hands of those who are resolutely dishonest, who have no ability to even differentiate between right and wrong, much less tell the truth. And America thinks that these are the heroes. You know, let's give a Bible stick to a hero, the U.S. military. Wow. And the seventh, of course, is the one that that Yahweh says he doesn't include in the things that he hates, but says that it's an abomination to your soul. So this is hostile to your soul, but is not among the, because he makes a distinction. There's six things that he hates, seven things that are an abomination to a individual soul. So this is the one that's an abomination to a soul. And then one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important. This is Salak, the one who claims to be dispatched and to be sent away. For example, one claiming to be an apostle.
Right.
Reaching out to many while giving them free rein to dismiss something. The Torah.
Yeah,
releasing and freeing them from it. The Old Testament. Sending them away from another message or messenger, as in Yahweh and his word. Sowing and appelling that which divorces, like from the covenant. Creating controversy and contentious strife. Stirring up a heated, bitter, and often violent conflict through human knowledge. Academic philosophy, while claiming kinship. Madone, you know, claiming to be, you know, I'm one of you.
Yeah.
But yet creating controversy, using human knowledge, didn't Paul specifically claim?
Well, this is Paul all over. This is Galatians.
Yeah, yeah. And creating it, the strife between brothers, boy, that is Galatians. So there you are. And I'm not, I think the reason that God doesn't hate, you know, we can talk about why God says, it's not that he doesn't hate it. He says, there's six things that I hate. It doesn't say that, you know, it might be seven that he hates, but there's six specifically that he hates. Because I think that these six things, he hates them because they lead to the seventh. And the seventh here is the greatest abomination of all to one soul. It's not just the perpetrator, but the victims here that are. Create an abomination, extraordinarily destructive to one soul, is this idea of claiming to be a messenger sent out from God. Everybody that's in the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church.
You can just trash everything he said.
Yeah. Paul, claiming to be sent out by God, given the world as his playground, and yet trashing everything God said. Rabbi Akiva, that the rabbis voted because of free will, and they elevated themselves above God, negating his testimony. Exactly. Creating controversy and strife between brothers within the family.
This was very astute of William, because everything from Saul, King Saul, King Shaul, all the way, everything you've talked about for the last 3 months is encapsulated here. So,
yeah, you know, and it goes on a little bit. In fact, there's some really some very powerful statements that follow. The antidote for all of this. So now that God said, this is what will destroy your soul. This is what God hates. He then tells you what the antidote is. So he says, my son, my child. Because the speaker here is Yahweh, my child. Closely observe, attentively focusing on. This is not Tsar. Keep close and watch over. Be preserved and be kept safe by. And persevere by developing a protective relationship with the one who delivers you from danger. This is not Tsar. Now, Tsar is an interesting word, Kirk, because it blends Shamar, to observe, with Yashar, to save. Yasha. So Yasha to save and Shamar to observe are blended together. So this is be preserved by being observant. You know, be kept safe by focusing.
Keep your eye on, watch.
Right.
Keep me.
Yeah, the guard at the guard tower helps to protect the community within by keeping their eyes open and looking out for danger that might approach. And so if you Natsar, the directions and terms of the binding contract, this is mitzvah. The single most important part of the Torah is the mitzvah. It's the part of the Torah that makes the ten statements that God etched in stone. It's the mercy. His mercy is available to the thousands who closely examine and carefully consider the directions and terms of his covenant. And mitzvah is the word that speaks of that. So if you were to look to the single most important aspect of the Torah, would be the directions and terms of the binding contract,
right,
the mitzvah. You know, the mitzvah, though, is used many places in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms as a synonym for Torah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just a synonym for Torah. It's the most important part of the Torah.
Yeah, sorry.
Because Torah at large means the source from which teaching, guidance, direction, and instruction flow. And mitzvah is the instructions, guidance, and directions regarding the binding covenant contract.
Yeah, this is the heart of the relationship. You start here, no matter what you do.
Yeah, start. Right, start here. So he says, closely examine, closely observe, attentively focus upon, be preserved and kept safe by, carefully watching over, the directions and terms of the covenant contract, the mitzvah, the prescriptions and conditions of the covenant, the instructions from the father to his children regarding the family precepts for the commission of that which is right, the teachings regarding that which should be done from Sawa, command. Now, command, you know, there's two different types of command. There's the command, like I command you to do something, which you can't do in the auspices of free will, or to be in command. To be in command means to act so as to grasp knowledge. You're in command of the information, which leads to understanding.
Yeah.
To be in command is to gain expertise, obtaining the faculty and the ability to appreciate that which is beneficial and right.
Yeah. Totally so, control of your emotions and everything. So, yeah.
Yeah. Closely observe, attentively focusing on, for the purposes of being kept safe, the directions and the terms of the binding contract of your father. So this is my son. Pay attention to the binding contract of the father. Did your dad have a binding contract with specific instructions that he presented a codicil to you and said, here are the terms and conditions of my binding family relationship contract? And did he present it as such to you?
No, I'm afraid not.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I would doubt there's a single father that has ever done that for a son. Since no father has presented their son with a mitzvah and told their son to closely examine and be saved by focusing upon the directions in terms of their binding contract, who is the father and what's the contract?
Yeshua, and it's the covenant contract, the mitzvah.
Okay. Is there any other way of interpreting this, recognizing that no earthly father has ever given their son a binding contract to be kept safe by observing?
No.
So in this context, mitzvah has to be the directions and guidance regarding the terms and conditions of the covenant. And the son is a member of the covenant, and the father is Almighty God, Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other reasonable way to interpret these words.
No.
And do not ever actually forgo or reject what? Do not actually forgo or reject your religion?
No.
Do not forgo and reject your military?
No, I didn't say that.
Do not forgo and reject your king or political leader?
Not at all. That's not.
No, do not forgo or reject the economic system of capitalism.
No, I didn't say that.
Do not forgo and reject democracy.
No.
Do not forgo or reject the military Bible stick. Do not forgo or reject the Christian New Testament. Do not forgo or reject Paul's letter to the Romans. What does he say? Do not forgo or reject
the Torah.
The very thing that Paul told them to forgo and reject.
He said.
So here you have Yahweh versus Paul. Who's right in that argument? Paul said reject the Torah, annul the Torah. Yahweh said, don't ever forgo or reject my Torah.
It's just so simple.
It's just so simple. So here he's saying, my son, closely observe, attentively focus on, and be protected by focusing upon
mm-hmm.
the directions, the guidance, the instructions regarding the binding contract of your father. And do not ever actually forgo or reject. This is al-natsah. Do not fail to act or ever negate the statements, causing disassociation from the relationship, forsaking, deserting, discontinuing, or abandoning the Torah.
Now think about what Paul said there for just a moment for those that are listening. If we on the Bible stick, where it says the Torah is dead, it doesn't save.
In Romans, he said that the Torah should be equated to a dead husband.
Yeah.
That you're no longer bound to a dead husband. And in Galatians, he says the Torah cannot save. And in Galatians, he says that the covenant that was created in the Torah actually enslaves, that it was with Hagar, and that it's a cruel and mean disciplinarian.
But that same question, that same Christian would look you in the eye and say, God is the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. How you figure that?
They're schizophrenic. They are rushing off thoughtlessly to believe that which is not true. So this the instruction here, do not ever actually forego or reject, it was written in the call stem. Call stem denotes a literal interpretation of a relationship-oriented instruction that should be considered genuine. In other words, interpret this literally as it relates to the relationship. Don't ever forego or reject. Literally, the call stem. as it relates to the relationship. Do you think it was written in the perfect, which it says, you know, for there's a period of time where I want you to not forget, not annul my Torah, but I'm going to write this in the perfect because there's going to be a time when I want you to annul and to reject my Torah. Do you think he wrote it in the perfect?
No, this is the done deal.
He wrote it in the imperfect, didn't he?
Yeah.
He made the statement in the imperfect, which means ongoing, without end, without ceasing. So Paul's claim that, was the Torah worthless? Oh, may it not be, because, you know, it served a purpose up through the birth of his Jesus Christ. Well, God's saying, no, imperfect. Ongoing, don't ever. Throughout all of the whole fabric of time, forgo or reject the Torah. Wow, that's it's a real problem for Christians written there in the imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that the Torah, which is the teaching and guidance, the source from which instructions and directions flow, of your mother. Who do you think this mom is, Kirk?
That's the Ruach Kodesh, the spiritual mother.
Set apart spirit. Yep. That's exactly. This is to a son who is part of the covenant.